You are Locked On Fantasy, your daily fantasy football podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Locked On Fantasy Football Podcast. As usual, I'm your host, Vinny Iyer. When I'm not doing this, I'm writing about NFL and fantasy football for SportingNews.com. Come to site now. Check out all we have from the Week 6 Sunday action of fallout. The surprises, the disappointments, looking at everything that happened on the field. That's what we do here on Mondays here. It's Roundup Monday here as we close the book on the Sunday games of week number 6. We'll have our show tomorrow focusing on the waiver wire as we flip to week 7, pick up Tuesday, and we'll also talk about our final game of week 6, the Lions and Packers, the Monday night game. But before then, we've got a slew of games to talk about here, 12 on the docket from Sunday, from early morning there with the Panthers Bucks all the way through Steelers Chargers, your Sunday night football game. So we got a lot to talk about there, a lot of things to dissect from what we saw on the field here on Sunday, and so let's dive right into it. Now, the early morning game, for us at least, on the East Coast, as they played in London at 2:30 kickoff, the Panthers beat the Buccaneers 37-26. Now, with this one, Kyle Allen, a solid caretaker type day, 227-2 for him. Christian McCaffrey had 22 carries for only 31 yards, but he scores there. And he scores in a great play with his one long catch as a receiver. The Bucs really tried to bottle him up for a second straight matchup here, but he gets the job done, scores twice here. It's not going to be a monstrous game when teams key on him, but what we liked was Kyle Allen playing off that and getting some other guys involved. Curtis Samuel back in the offense here, catching 4 of 6 for 70 yards on the score. DJ Moore pretty consistent here overall. PPR better than standard right now because he's not scoring a lot of touchdowns, but 7 for 73 on 10 targets, so pretty good. And he also had to exit the game for a little bit with a minor ribs issue there for the Panthers. But overall, I mean, this offense is operating as well as he can. Greg Olsen, 4 for 52, not terrible after not doing anything last week. So, again, still running through McCaffrey. I'm not expending too much on this offense. I mean, Curtis Samuel's a little bit big play dependent. This was a good matchup against the Bucs corners. It's good to see him get involved more consistently there as a PPR, a wide receiver 3, while Samuels is going to be a standard league. I think you play the matchups more with him, and that's what we saw in this particular game there. McCaffrey, of course, every week, it doesn't matter. We saw him rebound against a team that actually shut him down. So he's only had the one bad game against the Bucs in week 2 on Thursday night, but everything else has been smash, smash, smash. If you had Christian McCaffrey, took him first, second, third overall, you're extremely pleased with the results. Now, on the other side, Jameis Winston, what can we say about this? I mean, he had 5 interceptions, lost a couple fumbles in this game, just pretty bad overall for him. He did get to 400 yards and a touchdown. If he had a couple more touchdowns, we'd been okay with this turnover mess. But when you only have 1 and then you get take of that minus 12 there, it's pretty brutal, especially in a 4-point touchdown league here. 54 attempts, though. So this is going to happen a lot. I mean, the good thing is he's going to get the ball to the guys you want him to get it to. O.J. Howard is not one of those people. That he did have a big play in this game, actually, O.J. Howard early, but disappeared from the game plan, 30-yard catch, but that was it for him. That set up the first touchdown. Chris Godwin, I mean, he is just so efficient here. I mean, look at it, 10 catches on 12 targets for 151 yards. Well, Mike Evans, they force-fed him the ball, but that's when some bad things happen, some turnovers. And he only caught 9 of 17 targets, so just extremely inefficient. I think forcing the ball to Evans, is as much as it's good for Evans and people who own him in fantasy, it's not good for Winston. We've seen that. I mean, if it goes through Godwin, it's typically a good game, and Godwin still got his 10 for 151 and 12. So he had to see much less targets to really light up the Panthers here. And if they're playing a zone defense and he's going to shred the middle of the field, Godwin's going to be involved. I think they tried hard. Evans, the deep ball certainly wasn't there when you have only 10.7 yards per catch. Sometimes they do that, force it, but Godwin really, to me, is their number one because he can line up everywhere inside and just dominate all matchups. So Evans, I think, is going to continue to be inconsistent while Godwin continues to be the smash player. And I mentioned with the Buccaneers, of course, Ronald Jones had the touchdown. Peyton Barber had the bigger game. This is just a situation you want to avoid, given Dare Ogunbowale also scored a rushing touchdown. So, unfortunately, Winston didn't get either of those short scores. It would have been a better day for him overall, but still sloppy. But the good thing is he's distributing to guys that you really trust in fantasy football. The next game we'll turn to as we switch to 1 p.m. Eastern time here is the Ravens holding off the Bengals 23-17. Now, I didn't love the Bengals defense, and they did get a turnover there late of Andy Dalton, only two sacks over. So a bit disappointing day. And again, this is not a defense that makes a lot of plays, and it's hard when you have a rushing team as well because your defense is not on the field a lot to make some big plays either. So decent game for the Ravens defense, but running game, that's all about the Ravens right now. And what a performance by Lamar Jackson. 236 passing, no touchdowns there, but you'll take it every time when a guy has 152 yards rushing and a TD. First player to have that combination of production in a game. He just keeps sending new marks as a dual threat quarterback in the NFL. Mark Ingram, we thought he would do much, but when Lamar Jackson goes off like that and has 152 on the ground, Ingram doesn't have to do much. He still gets you 52 and a touch here. No Marquise Brown this game. He was scratched for it. So anyone looking for any deep production out of the Ravens' passing offense had to be disappointed, but you knew this was going to happen. They rushed for 269 yards. The Bengals are just awful. You don't really need to throw it, but you were pleased then with Mark Andrews getting 6 for 99 on 8 targets. So he was clearly going to dominate targets here without the usage of Marquise Brown, run heavy, playing off the tight ends. So, again, Andrews in this current tight end landscape, he's the guy you start every week. Ingram locked in. Now, still not enough from Gus Edwards or Justice Hill splitting those backup carries behind Ingram. We have to wait until something happens to Ingram before we can deploy either of them, even in the greatest of matchups here. And Jackson was spectacular here as well on the ground, and really supports him with his passing numbers. That's more the gravy, where a lot of quarterbacks running is the supporting production, but for Lamar Jackson, the passing is kind of pads the stats there, and he was able to get a solid 9 more points doing that for you on top of the 21.2 he gave you just purely as a runner in this game. Now, looking at the Bengals, really disappointing game for one Tyler Boyd. We thought he was going to eat in the slot, but only 3 catches for 10 yards and 7 targets. So the Ravens made it a point to try to take him out of the game. That was good for Auden Tate. 12 targets, highly inefficient, but 5 catches for 91. So as well as long as A.J. Green is out and there's no John Ross, Auden Tate is clearly the number 2 option here. He's kind of like a tight end hybrid a little bit, so that kind of kills C.J. Uzuma and Tyler Eifert. They have no value here whatsoever. And Joe Mixon, what can we say? This is just ugly for Joe Mixon. 10 touches, 39 yards. So just being attached too much to this Bengals offense has been very frustrating. We see now it's hurting Boyd, in essence, here. And Boyd and Tate might cut into each other's production, and Mixon not getting it done. No good offensive line play. Mediocre play from Dalton overall in this game. So tough one for sure for the Bengals, but not a team that you want to invest heavily in year-long or DFS for any particular week. The next game we'll talk about is the Seahawks and Browns, and this one had a lot more fantasy fun here. The Seahawks 32-28 go on the road and win, and the Browns had multiple opportunities to win this game. I kind of like Baker Mayfield in this one. He came through in a weird way because he had 30 rushing yards and a touchdown there, which helped a little bit diffuse some of the things that he was doing on with the 3 turnovers here for Mayfield, so 3 more interceptions. It's been ugly in reality football for Mayfield, but you actually got some decent production in this particular game overall from him. And given that it was limited and had 3 interceptions, I mean, that tells you how bad he's been this season totally for the Browns with his passing and just a very frustrating situation overall there. Now, with Russell Wilson, you got his typical game, 295 yards, 2 scores here. Also had 9 rushes for 31 yards on TD. He's just taking over now. And part of it is we know the Seahawks defense is leaky. That's great for him. It's good for Chris Carson because they want to run it and keep it away from the defense and keeping them off the field. 24 carries, 124 yards on a TD there. He did lose a fumble, but overall that's where this team goes through those two guys running the ball and throwing downfield. Tyler Lockett just missed a touchdown, which ended up going to Carson, 5 for 75, caught all of his targets. What else is new? DK Metcalf locked in as well with 4 catches, 69 on his 5 targets. So pretty much this is a Tyler Lockett, DK Metcalf type offense. Unfortunately, Jerron Brown had the 2 touchdowns in this game, but the main guys, you're not going to dig deep for David Moore or Jerron Brown. It's still Lockett, locked in as a wide receiver too. Metcalf, a matchup, kind of looking at him, matchup dependent wide receiver 3, and definitely was that with the Browns corners yet missing another game in this one. And Carson and Wilson easily in your lineup every week. Now, Nick Chubb was spectacular in this one. He's still getting it done, even with all the disappointment in this offense from the Browns. 20 for 122, 2 TDs. He had 249 and a TD from Mayfield here in this one. So Chubb looking great. Still, they just need to keep feeding him more. He also had 5 catches here for 17 yards as well. So 139 and 2, you'll take that on 25 touches every week from Chubb. With Odell Beckham Jr., he had a bit of a rebound game, but still not spectacular. 6 catches on 11 targets only for 101 yards. And Ricky Seals-Jones gets our attention here at tight end. It's been a pretty rough position, especially with Will Dissly going down for the Seahawks before he could even make a catch. So tough break if you have Dissly. He was looking like a solid tight end every week. But now Seals-Jones might be an alternative that he's scored in 2 of the past 3. They need somebody to fill in the David Njoku role. So we're not going to totally forget about him in this offense. And Jarvis Landry just shut down 3 for 36. Thought he would do a little bit more in the middle of the field, but that action went more to Seals-Jones in this particular game overall. So Beckham still starting every week. Mayfield is extremely hard to trust. And Chubb is the consistent Brown here. In fact, Baker's struggles really help Chubb in a way because they're forced to give him the ball and be the centerpiece of this offense at the moment. Our final game of this segment that we'll talk about is the Saints and Jaguars. Not much to see here. 13-6, the Saints win. Grindy defensive game. Thought Alvin Kamara could do a lot more, but he was a little bit banged up. Remember, had the issue pop up late in practice on Friday. So 18 touches for only 66 yards. So tough. It goes back to a tough offense with Teddy Bridgewater, 8 for 89, only for Michael Thomas on 12 targets. Jared Cook had the TD there from Bridgewater. So you're waiting for Drew Brees to come back. It's going to be a little hit or miss a little bit with the production elsewhere. The Jaguars, pretty good defense on the road. It wasn't going to be so easy for the Saints, and we kind of saw that kind of come here that Latavius Murray actually outrushed Kamara, 8 for 44, and outpointed him overall with 11 for 79. So we'll keep an eye if Kamara is limited by this injury, but certainly they used Murray a lot more than we've seen in recent week. Now, Leonard Fournette, the good thing about him is he was bottled up in the running game, as we expected with the Saints' run defense, but still the only source of passing production out of the backfield, 6 for 46. So 26 touches for their 116 yards. They'll take that any time from your number two back, and that's what you've basically seen from Fournette. DJ Chark got the Marshawn Lattimore treatment. By the way, he's continuing to shut people down week after week. So Saints, that side of the field, Allen Robinson is the next victim, so to speak, of the Bears against Lattimore next week. So he's playing balls out. So is the rest of the secondary right now, the pass rush and Gardner Minshew, it all added up to a very disappointing day. So the Saints defense, we really like them, exploiting them against the pass, but they're playing a lot better of late. We've seen the numbers against Dak Prescott. Minshew, we liked them in smash spots, so that's a tough one. You have to reassess matchups sometimes as they develop, and the Saints have certainly become a lot tougher against the pass. Minshew had the interception, 1-6 through the yards. His by far his worst game as a rookie, and this is why you don't always trust rookie quarterbacks. I think you have to do it matchup-based, get them in the most comfortable spots, and this was not one for Gardner Minshew, and he's still more of a backup player, not a QB1 that you should be looking at in the back end of reasonable-sized leagues. So we'll talk about 8 more games in our final 2 segments here, but first I got to tell you about Peloton. Peloton is offering a limited time offer. Get $100 off accessories when you purchase a Peloton bike. Get a great cardio workout at home. Go to onepeloton.com and use the promo code LOCKED to get started there with the Peloton program. We'll be right back here to talk about our next 4 games here on the Week 6 NFL Sunday schedule. All right, let's continue here looking at the next wave of games here. We stay in the 1 o'clock window. This was a bit of a marquee game that we went into. Unfortunately, it didn't live up to the hype, at least on one side of things. The Chiefs go and lose there at home to the Texans. Second straight home loss for the Chiefs. And Patrick Mahomes at least did rebound for your team. He did have 273 here. Still looked off, only 19 for 35, had an interception. But 273, not the 350, 400 that we're used to from Mahomes. But the three scores are nice after he had that tough outing against the Colts. So at least that happened here. Tyreek Hill was a big part of this damage here, coming back, making that brilliant leaping 46-yard touchdown catch there. His first play back. Welcome back, Tyreek Hill. We've been missing him on our teams, and we certainly saw what he can do immediately to help Mahomes. Unfortunately, the rest of the receivers disappeared, including Travis Kelce, who was bottled up a little bit. The Texans had been pretty good against the tight end. We saw that here. He had a few catches, but not what we were looking for here. We've been waiting for Kelce to do more damage. He's had only one touchdown here so far this season. So a little bit brutal there in terms of Kelce. I mean, for the investment you made in him, you're just a little disappointed right now with the way things have gone down. The team's not running enough. They did get some touchdowns to the backs, Darrell Williams and Damien Williams, but overall, I mean, it's pretty much the Tyreek Hill show. I mean, these other guys, Mecole Hardman, Byron Pringle, without Sammy Watkins in there, is a bit of a mixed bag. So if you're into these other guys, DeMarcus Robinson, who had zero catches here, you just have to avoid all this, especially now with Darrell Williams cutting into Damien Williams and LeSean McCoy. It's really tough here. And the Chiefs' offense, when it doesn't produce and you're tying a lot to it, it's hard. And we said we want the exposure, but right now Hill and Kelce are maybe the only places we want the exposure until the Chiefs kind of break out of their funk here offensively. And it's a funk relative to them. When they only score 24 points as a team that easily scored 30 consistently last year, that is a funk in terms of fantasy football. Now, no issues with the Texans here. And what we like about the Texans, they've become a complete offense. It's not necessarily good for DeAndre Hopkins. Yet another disappointing game, 9 for 55 on 12 targets. Will Fuller really cooled off, 5 for 44 on 9 targets. But this team can now run the ball with Carlos Hyde. He's been very nice steal as a running back too here. 27 touches, 130 yards, and a score. He did lose a fumble, but you'll forgive him with that kind of volume against the Chiefs. And the game flow actually went in the Texans' favor here. Now, Deshaun Watson, 280 passing. He did have two interceptions, but a TD there through the air and two rushing, along with 10 carries for 42. So Lamar Jackson, we talk about his running and what it does there for his overall production, but Watson right there with him, especially with the scores. He takes off and takes off quickly for the end zone and scores quite a bit. And it's a great element to him. And right now, Watson really challenging Mahomes there for the title of the best fantasy quarterback overall. And he's just getting the job done a little bit more. Had that one hiccup game against the Panthers, but you're really seeing what he's doing here. Now, what's hurting right now, even without Kenny Stills in this game, you got competition from Darren Fells and Jordan Akins, or something like the tight end, Kiki Kuti involved, suddenly Duke Johnson involved. He scored a touchdown. That said, Hopkins did drop a score. Fuller missed a few long plays in this one. So those connections downfield are a little off, but Texans doing a little bit of dinking and dunking and running a little bit more, and that's certainly helped hurt these wide receivers in their downfield production. But be patient. They have the Colts this week. Chances to maybe put things up and smash again like they did against the Falcons in the previous week. Now, the next game that we'll talk about here is the Redskins and Dolphins. Yep, we do have to talk about this one. 17-16, the Redskins hold on as the Dolphins, with Ryan Fitzpatrick leading a rally in relief of Josh Rosen. They failed to convert the two-point conversion that would have given them the game. Now, we'll just talk briefly about the Dolphins. The big thing here is that Mark Walton took control of this backfield a little bit. I mean, we saw that 11 touches here for 75 yards, and Kenny Drake still got 16 touches for 70 yards. So it was a bit of a split between these guys. The Redskins offered less resistance here, but of course what happens, Kalen Ballage, the much maligned Kalen Ballage, gets the rushing touchdown. Neither pay dirt for Drake or Walton in this game. So a little bit frustrating. Preston Williams, so now it's kind of a split thing. He had two catches for 31. Mike Gesicki, not going to trust him. 3 for 7 on 51. Devontae Parker has a touchdown, but just nothing here to trust. And The Dolphins are doing even something worse, as they're diversifying their portfolio with their backs, receivers, too much, so there's not one source of production there. Now they're even toggling quarterbacks, so it did get worse with the way we look at Miami's production here in this particular game. Now, the Redskins, we like Case Keenum as a sleeper. He only had to throw for 166 yards. So they rushed for 145. We saw this from a mile away that Adrian Peterson was going to have a big rushing game. He did, 23 carries for 118 yards. But when they had to throw, it was Terry McLaurin. He had 100 of those 166 passing yards from Keenum, 4 catches on 7 targets, 2 touchdowns. McLaurin in the running here for Offensive Rookie of the Year. Too bad he's on not a very good team right now, I'd say. It's more Kyler Murray in that discussion more than anyone else, as well as Josh Jacobs. But McLaurin was any other team that wasn't Washington right now, he would definitely have that. McLaurin should be starting every week in your team as wide receiver 3, especially with Keenum back at the controls and not Dwayne Haskins or Colt McCoy. Now, the next game we'll talk about here is the Eagles and Vikings. And this one was kind of disappointing if you were investing in the Eagles. You thought they could do a little bit more in this. They lose 38-20. Rough day for Carson Wentz. He did have the 202 touchdowns, 23 yards rushing to erase his interception along with 306. So 306 and 2 you'll take in most weeks. You thought he could have done a little bit more here, leaving 14 completions on the table, making a few mistakes. There are some wide-open guys. And Miles Sanders out of the backfield was a big weapon. He caught all three of his targets for 86 yards and a TD. Alshon Jeffery, you thought the matchup was hard, but they kept doing the underneath throws to him, and you saw the 10 catches on 12 targets for 76. So not a great average, but they used him as the extension of the running game here, and it worked out as well as Sanders catching the passes. Now, Zach Ertz, this is a little bit frustrating because you have 9 targets for him. He only catches 4 for 54, loses the fumble. Well, Dallas Goedert had 8 targets for 5 for 48. So Ertz is looking like an absolute bust here based on where you drafted him, with Goedert being just as involved as he is. Carson Wentz, that connection with Ertz just hasn't revved up as much. They only have had 1 touchdown that came last week. The numbers and targets aren't just not good right now. So I think having DeSean Jackson back to stretch the field is going to help Ertz in the end, because it's a guy that people have to respect down the field, opening up the middle of the field right now. Jeffrey and Ertz are just battling in tight windows to get open, and I think that's going to be something that we hope that DeSean Jackson could return this week. There's some optimism with the abdomen injury that he will return against the Cowboys. And, again, I don't necessarily like him field stretching. We did see a big play for Robbie Anderson against the Cowboys. We'll talk about that game in a little bit. But overall, I think Jackson can really help Jeffrey and Ertz, and they can't get him back soon enough. Of course, that ties into Carson Wentz being better and the running game being a little more effective as well with Jordan Howard. We knew that was not going to be the case here against the Vikings run defense, only 49 yards on 13 carries, and the game flow really didn't help either. Now, with the Vikings, we knew that they weren't going to have much success running the ball. We had Dalvin Cook salvage his day here. They kind of bottled up him in the passing game as well, so only 18 touches for 54 yards, but gets that score to salvage his day. Alexander Mattison actually outrushed Dalvin Cook with 63 on 14 carries, but they were running out the clock a little bit, and he had a 35-yard burst against the tired Eagles defense late in that game. Now, we're burying the lead a little bit, but Stephon Diggs, this was the game we were waiting from him. 7 for 167 on 11 targets, 3 TDs. Adam Thielen also got the fun, 6 for 57 and a TD on 8 targets. So overall, when you look at it, we knew this was coming. Diggs also had 18 yards rushing, by the way, off some plays. They were going to overcorrect and get Diggs the ball. That's what happened in this matchup dictated, with Sidney Jones just being overmatched here by Diggs. They didn't have Avante Maddox, didn't have Ronald Darby. And Diggs was in a primo spot to produce. Kirk Cousins with another great game, 333 and 4. So second straight big game for him. He's firmly in the QB1 conversation, a guy that kind of written off. We had him in the mid-20s, but back-to-back big games here for Cousins have him back on the radar here as a viable play, and they have the Lions this week. So certainly nothing too scary that matchup. Lions have been better against the run, or against the pass, and weaker against the run this year, but still a good spot for Cousins, maybe needing to throw it, especially now that he's rolled up with Thielen and Diggs overall. So Diggs and Thielen should never come out of your lineup now. They're just too good of receivers they are the go-to guys. There's not much else here. They're only occasionally putting Laquon Treadwell, Kyle Rudolph, and Irv Smith into the mix. And we know Dalvin Cook off the screen game. But when Thielen, Diggs, and Cook are your primary targets and you have to keep throwing more, this is what you see here from the Vikings offense. So there's the early window. We'll talk about one more game in the 4 o'clock window here before we take our next break here. The Cardinals 34-33, they survive as the Falcons see a missed extra point by Matt Bryant that would have tied the game, sent it in overtime, but nope, the Falcons lose again. They fall to 1-5. Well, now the Arizona Cardinals are 2-3-1, so a good spot here for the Cardinals. They're playing better every week, and guess who's getting better every week, folks? Kyler Murray, 340-3. No turnovers here for Kyler Murray, and it helps when he can run the ball easily, but they've realized without Christian Kirk in there, just throw to the backs. David Johnson, Chase Edmonds, both smashed it here. There was a question about Johnson playing with the back injury. Now, if you had thought about saying, okay, Johnson might not finish the game with his back injury, we saw him come out last week, we like the way Chase Edmonds looked, we like this matchup, you might have played them both if you handcuffed, and you were rewarded there. I mean, it's tough to do that certain times, but, I mean, think about this. I mean, they both had 34 yards rushing. Johnson had the touchdown there on the ground. They both have a touchdown through the air. So Johnson played through the back. He's been outstanding here as an RB1. If you took him early, given the landscape here, Alvin Kamara's hit a bit of a wall. Saquon Barkley not available. McCaffrey's doing his type of things. But you got David Johnson a few picks after McCaffrey, and say you took him ahead of DeAndre Hopkins and Julio Jones as the top receivers on the board, you're very thrilled because he is a top receiver when you think about it. 6 for 68, caught with 6 of 8 targets there. So this offense runs through Murray, the running and passing, and Johnson's receiving and running as well, and Edmonds getting involved as well. And I think they're finding some horizontal ways to stretch the field here without Christian Kirk. Good adjustment here by Cliff Kingsbury. So Chase Edmonds might have some standalone value here going forward and pretty good matchups for the Cardinals because they want to get him involved. And then there's room with the spread. This 10-personnel offense where they're using a lot of 4 wides where they can use Johnson as a wide receiver but also have Edmonds in the backfield to really exploit that. And an interesting offense. We're learning a little bit more about it every week with Kingsbury, but Murray looks locked in now for sure, and it can only get better when Kirk gets back healthy to help Larry Fitzgerald and these backs. Now, we turn to the other side with the Falcons. Matt Ryan, I mean, let's stop faulting Matt Ryan in reality here. He's doing everything he can to keep it together for the Falcons. 30 of 36, 356 and 4 for Ryan. No turnovers here, so we thought he could smash it. I like the Falcons to win the game. Their defense absolutely did not show up, or they would have won this game. But he got the principles. We know that the Cardinals can't cover the tight end. They absolutely could not cover Austin Hooper. 8 catches on 8 targets for 117 and a score. 8 of 9 targets caught by Julio Jones for 108. 4 for 48 on 6 targets and a touchdown for Ridley. So still not getting the touchdowns for Jones, but a good get-well game for all three of those main receivers. And Mohamed Sanu, again, if Hooper has a big game, Sanu is typically not going to have a big game. You saw that 3 for 29. And, again, Devonta Freeman also in the mix a little bit. 2 scores through the air from Matt Ryan. So he's back in a good spot as an RB2 after struggling to run. Good matchup. He comes through and gets the 22 touches. Ito Smith just disappears with a little banged-up sense here. So they went full on Freeman. That's great for his owners. And you got 118 and 2 scores here. And that's good. For Freeman, again, all these matchups are not going to be as easy, but we wanted that confidence from Freeman, and here we are with it again in 2019 as a legitimate high-end RB2 now that we look at. So we have 4 more games to talk about, but first, guys, we have to take a break to talk about sex. That's right. We're talking about good sex, and that means we're talking about Blue Chew. You can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up. You just have to go to BlueChew.com. It's blue like the color blue. With Blue Chew, you're going to get the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know that it works. You can take Blue Chew anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach. And since it's a chewable, you can know it can work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever that opportunity arises. Now, everyone could benefit from extra function, more confidence where it counts. And, guys, we're all used to talking a good game, but Blue Chew is what's going to help you really with your follow-through. Trust me there. With Blue Chew, it's prescribed online, ships direct to your door in a discreet packet, so none of that awkwardness that comes from waiting in the pharmacy. And because Blue Chew prepares and ships directly to you, and they're made in the USA, they're also cheaper than a pharmacy. So that's a great deal, and there's a special deal for you more so as a listener to Locked On Fantasy Football. Visit BlueChew.com and get your first shipment free when you use the special promo code Locked On. You'll only pay the $5 shipping there. Again, BlueChew.com, BlueChew.com, promo code Locked On to try it for free. Blue Chew is known as the better, cheaper, and faster choice. You should know them too, and we thank them for sponsoring Locked On Fantasy Football. We'll be right back here to close the show with a look at four more games on the Week 6 NFL Sunday slate. All right, let's look at the final few games on the schedule here that we had. A couple more late afternoon games, and then our look at Sunday Night Football. The 49ers and Rams, not much to talk about here on the Rams side. I mean, this is an ugly microscopic number for Jared Goff against this very good 49ers defense. 13 for 24 for 78 yards. I don't know how that's possible. Sacked four times. Just non-existent here. The Rams passing game, and it was non-existent in the running game for the most part. Malcolm Brown did his best. He looked good early in the game. They got in and scored on a run from Robert Woods, but that was it. First drive, touchdown, nothing else the rest of the way for the Rams. And Gurley missing didn't really change the way they approached the offense. Just Goff couldn't get it going. So, you know, that killed all his receivers' value. Wood salvaged his day with the touchdown, but Brandon Cooks and Cooper Kupp, who was red hot with all his 100-yard games, he just disappeared from the box score in this particular game. So it was brutal all around for the Rams in a game that they want to burn here. Probably Sean McVay doesn't want to have any of these games implanted in his mind, but you know they will be because of his memory and just how bad it was. 4 for 17 for Kupp. I mean, that's all you need to know. When he has a bad game like that, you know the entire Rams offense really was terrible. I don't think you read too much because they do have the Falcons again this week. So that could be a get-well game. We saw what happened there with the Cardinals last week. So Goff, again, should renew your confidence. Don't chase or be disappointed by the previous box score. Just keep looking ahead there. Now, Jimmy Garoppolo, we thought he could do a little bit, but only 243 and an interception. So really wasn't needed much. They kind of grinded out, only 99 yards rushing on 41 attempts. So they just kept pounding away at the Rams, even though it didn't have too much success. The good news was George Kittle, another big game for him. Came in with that growing soreness. It didn't look like he was sore at all. 8 catches on 8 targets for 103. So he's locked in. He's the one big three tight end that's starting to come through. Like expected, back-to-back 100-yard games. He's in the groove now. The running game's opening things up. The other wide receivers are competent enough. But Kittle's clearly the number one target. Everything else is by committee here between Dante Pettis, Debo Samuel, Marquise Goodwin, Kendrick Bourne, the backs. Kittle is the one binding force in there. And we told you that Tevin Coleman is still lead back, and that's what it played out. 20 touches here for 61 and a score, while Matt Breida was limited to 17 touches for 63 yards. So Coleman still a little bit ahead. Breida's in the passing game back, but Coleman's the finishing back more of choice here, and the guy that's going to get the ball near the goal line. So still two usable guys, especially in PPR leagues and certain independent starts. But overall, again, Coleman is the guy that you're going to prefer in your lineup. The next game we'll talk about, and there's not much to talk about on one of these teams. Well, one thing, but the Broncos beat the Titans 16-0 now. Marcus Mariota dragged down this offense to a new low here. 7 of 18, 2 interceptions, 63 yards. Terrible. I mean, it was a tough thing to watch, and then it got tougher because they had to bench Marcus Mariota. I went with Ryan Tannehill. He did a little bit better, more of the dinking and dunking, but he actually took 4 sacks and had an interception in a less time than Mariota. So I don't know if he's going to be an upgrade. He's killing Derrick Henry. 15 carries for 28 yards. Yep, that's right. With that volume, he had 28 yards. We know he's matchup dependent a little bit. 16 for 33 overall from scrimmage for Henry. Ugly. I mean, everyone just disappeared from this passing game. And it's not like they don't have talent here. Delanie Walker, Corey Davis, A.J. Brown, Adam Humphries. This offense needs to be better to open things up for Derrick Henry. And just no creativity, kind of boring. There's a few plays that they designed, but I don't think Tannehill is going to help facilitate any of this, really, in my opinion. It just has to be, if the Titans can run the ball and play dominant defense and open things up for Henry. Like, the Chargers game could be a good example this week. The Chargers just got gashed against the run. We'll get into that in a moment. So that is maybe the spot where he's going to get a get-well game for Henry. But let's hope Tannehill, if he starts here, can at least be competent so everyone just doesn't load the box and take away Henry. And at least he was completing passes, getting Davis involved, so that might be a mildly good sign. But I'm not investing anywhere in this offense beyond Henry and hoping for the best here as your RB2 because he's still getting the volume there. Now, Cortland Sutton on the other side looked very good, tough matchup. I said, you're going to play him every week. He looked very good at 4 for 76 on 8 targets. Emmanuel Sanders disappeared because he's a toe injury guy that I don't really need on my roster. I want to play. Sutton is clearly the number one here. Still more split time between Royce Freeman. Interesting they used Royce Freeman a little bit more than Philip Lindsay here in the pass game. He had 16 touches overall for 76, but Philip Lindsay had the 70 rushing yards on the score. So Lindsay's still the better choice over Freeman. Freeman, you just get very limited results here in standard leagues. The Broncos defense came to life against Vic Fangio, second straight week. They dominated an opponent after taking care of the Chargers last week. So looking good for the Broncos defense all of a sudden. Joe Flacco, again, not trusting, but Cortland Sutton, again, is a guy that I like as a wide receiver 3 every week. And Philip Lindsay looks like, even in a tough matchup, you're looking at him as no worse than a flex play in regular size leagues. The next game we'll talk about, this is the marquee 4 o'clock game, 24-22. The Jets upset the Cowboys. Hold on, as the Cowboys can't make a 2-point conversion. Another rough game for Dak Prescott. He did have a rushing touchdown, but only 277 yards passing. He actually avoided turnovers in this one. Ezekiel Elliott, in a weird way, I mean, they were trailing in this game, but they ran back in it, and Ezekiel Elliott had the 28 carries still. This is his biggest volume game of the season. They're scoring and also being involved in the passing game. Part of it is Amari Cooper went out of the game, so they needed to do more checkdowns, get him involved, throw more to Jason Witten. They couldn't get the downfield game to Michael Gallup without Cooper, so a lot more involvement for Elliott. So good development fantasy-wise for Elliott, even though it wasn't a good reality one for the Cowboys with the injury to Cooper. We'll have to see that. And then it's going to be tough because Cooper has a great matchup if he can play against the Eagles with a quad injury, but he said he was hurting after the game, so we'll have to see if he can go. But really disappointing there with this whole Cowboys offensive performance. You thought they would do more, with the exception of Witten, Witten and Elliott, 5 for 57 on 7 targets there. Elliott, as I mentioned, added 5 catches for 47 as well. So good news for Elliott, maybe not good news for the Cowboys overall. Remember, the Eagles are much tougher against the run this week, so they really need Cooper in there to really open things up for Gallup. I might stay away from Dak, given the offensive line issues, if he has to face the Eagles without Cooper here, despite the good matchup on the back end for week number 7. Now, on the Jets side of things, Sam Darnold returned and made this offense somewhat legitimate again. And thankfully, 338-2 for Darnold, so one of his best games of his career, leading the big win. Le'Veon Bell, tough sledding in the running game as we expected, but made up for it with 14 for 50 and a touchdown. So he'll take that. I mean, it's not RB1 value that you want, but again, a tough matchup. Sometimes you have to lower expectations like we did with Dalvin Cook and take what you can get there. Now, Robbie Anderson, he woke up, made a big play, 92-yarder there. 125 and a touch for Robbie Anderson. So he looked good as the number one outside again. Jameson Crowder, the PPR beast, was there catching 6 of 9 targets for 98 yards. So Anderson and Crowder is where this offense goes. And Demaryius Thomas, just the presence alone is helping both these guys. 4 for 62 for him. So legitimate streamlined offense. Thomas on the outside with Anderson as a deep threat. Crowder in the middle. Or even Ryan Griffin, the tight end, filling in for Chris Herndon with the hamstring. He comes through for 3 for 28 in the score. So completely different offense when you don't have Luke Falk or Trevor Siemian in there. Sam Darnold proved that he has good keys to this offense and can really help it, and that's good news here. So now Bell's every week locked in, Anderson and Crowder. Anderson certainly wide receiver 3 that you can look at in the standard, while Crowder's the guy in PPR now with Darnold back and him being a target monster that he can be in your lineup in PPR as a 3 or flex as well every week. Now, finally, we'll close with the last game. We have the Chargers losing to the Steelers. That's right. Losing, they were actually down here 24-0 before they scored 17 points in the fourth quarter to make it look a lot better. It didn't matter. They were favored. They should have won this game easily, but they don't. Now, Phillip Rivers, it was a bit of a grind, but I guess it was an acceptable game in the end. 320-2 with two interceptions, but he did also lose a fumble here. So, yeah, the -6, lost an automatic touchdown there. So it could have been a lot better there, but I didn't love Rivers in this matchup. I thought it was going to be run, but instead they couldn't do that. Even 32 yards only on the ground. Now, they force-fed Melvin Gordon. He was just totally ineffective in this game overall. He did a little bit in the passing game, but him and Eckler just have looked awful here the last 2 weeks all of a sudden when Eckler was smashing it early in the season. So a little bit of concern there. There was no concern with Hunter Henry. This tight end landscape, welcome back, Hunter Henry. 8 of 9 targets for 100 yards. And he was playing banged up with that knee with limited snaps here. Scores twice there. Mike Williams woke up 5 for 72 on 10, but he could have had a lot more there. And Keenan Allen disappears for the third straight game, 2 for 33 on 6 targets. So I don't know what's going on there. Maybe they're getting too cute, spreading it around when you have 9 guys catching passes here from Phillip Rivers, including a guy named Jason Moore. So just adding guys, they used a little bit of a 3 tight end look at times to help them get back in the game, which helped Henry. But Henry can certainly cut into what Williams and Allen do because he can work in the middle of the field. He's also a big-bodied possession target. So Henry's good if you have him, but it's a little bit downside more for Williams, who's unstartable right now as a wide receiver 3, and Keenan Allen, who's just really disappointing as a wide receiver 1 at the very moment. Now, finally, we'll talk about the Steelers here and what we saw. Devlin Hodges wasn't asked too much as we thought. He did throw an interception when he had to. He did have a touchdown, but it was more like a flip touchdown to James Conner. So really an extension of the running game. 7 for 78 here and a score for him. 16 for 41 on the ground. So he got banged up late in the game. They didn't need him with a big lead, so they pulled him out. But overall, you'll take that any time. 23 touches. Close to 120 yards and a couple scores. You'll take that from your back every week, especially if he's your number one and came through against the Chargers. That's why I kind of like Derrick Henry, because they can't stop the run here, but you figure they'll be committed. Benny Snell actually had 75 yards rushing there, so somewhat notable there without Jalen Samuels, and we know he's going to be out for a bit, so we'll see what happens there. The unfortunate thing is when you run the ball and you play ball control and you score on defense and do all kinds of things like that, you're not going to pass much, especially with the third-string rookie undrafted quarterback. And Juju Smith-Schuster, 1 catch for 7 yards on 4 targets. Deontay Johnson, 2 for 14 on 2. So didn't need to throw the ball at all to win this game. The game flow did not work in the favor of Smith-Schuster here at all. So he's also one of your disappointing wide receiver 1 busts at the moment. And unfortunately, I don't think it's going to get much better with Mason Rudolph coming back. Still going to be running in defense. That's how the Steelers are going to win. Mike Tomlin's loving that, but fantasy football owners certainly can't buy into that as much here in 2019. So there you have it. There's a look at all 12 games of the Week 6 NFL Sunday slate, to the fantasy football takeaways you need to know. Good luck if you've got still something on the line for Lions-Packers. We'll be back tomorrow with our final takeaways of the week with that game, as well as to turn our attention to the Week 7 waiver wire with a pickup Tuesday. So for Roundup Monday for Week 6, this has been Vinny Iyer. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.